Morning, Justice Holland, and may it please the court. My name is Bernard O'Donnell.
We all remembered that from the last argument.
Well, I do that, Your Honor, because I was once advised, I think it was at a CLE conference, that you should do that as a courtesy to people who may listen in to a recording.
That's very thoughtful of you.
I hope
court, the court will take judicial notice that Mr. Wallace is here.
Based in this case, I'll get right to the point. In this case, the state is arguing that, well, let's change the situation here, and we agree that Vicki Chow, there was sufficient evidence to charge and convict Vicki Chow of manslaughter in 1995. And the state is arguing that to preclude the state from now charging her with and convicting her of a lesser-included offense, which is kind of what happened in Cain versus State, a case some years back, a vehicular homicide prosecution where there was a statute of limitations question. The state argues that the state was not prevented from fully litigating the LI issue before Williams because Williams, the state is arguing that it was presented from fully litigating the LIO issue. That is not accurate. The state was never prevented from fully litigating, says the LIO issue. And the Williams decision had nothing to do with the LIO issue. In this case, the state would be correct if the Williams decision and the Chow decision, says the reversal of her felony murder conviction, had something to do with a lesser-included offense, with the basis under 206 for charging a lesser-included offense. If the rules had changed based upon how 206 is applied, then the state would be right. It would be like the Vastola decision from the Third Circuit to which they refer. But the Williams decision had nothing to do with 206 and whether there was an evidentiary basis for charging Ms. Chow with the lesser included offense of manslaughter back in 1995. And that's the crucial.
I know you're focusing on charging decisions. Let me ask you about the authority of the Superior Court. Let's assume that back originally, over the objection of the state and everyone else, a judge who could foresee what would ultimately happen at that trial said, I am reducing this conviction or directing a verdict or granting a relief to reduce it to manslaughter based on the evidence presented over the objection of the state and over the objection of the defendant. The court would have the power to do that, right?
The court would have the power to do that, and the defense would not be prejudiced because the defense would have been granted what it was entitled to over the opposition of the state, so therefore there's no prejudice.
Okay.
That's unlike this case.
Is it your position that the Superior Court, in the most recent sentencing of your client, did not have the authority to sentence?
Yes, because of judicial estoppel, both the court because of the state's position, the court because of the state's position.
Well, can I ask you to comment then on this language from our last opinion in Chow in 2007? Although Chow's felony murder convictions must be vacated under Williams, the Superior Court may determine that Chow should be resentenced on the lesser included charges of manslaughter. Is that the law of the case that would allow the Superior Court to sentence your client on manslaughter no matter what the state says?
Well, at that point, when the court said that, this issue was not before the court, and it was permissive language. The Superior Court may consider convicting her of the lesser. The trial court is not obligated to find her guilty of manslaughter.
Well,
the court didn't say that.
Isn't there a distinction between the issue of whether the Superior Court had the power to do what it did on the one hand, And on the other hand, the issue of whether or not the state would be equitably precluded from making an argument. I mean, isn't the latter all that's involved here, rather than a question of the Superior Court's power?
If I understand, says the question, Your Honor, I would tend to agree, because the Superior Court says had the power. Let's say,
I mean, I thought you were arguing that the state can't be heard to argue, as distinguished from whether the Superior Court has the power to
do
what it did.
Yes, I'd like to draw that distinction in light of the question. If, for example, the trial court had charged a lesser included offense at the defense request back in 1995, the Superior Court would have the power at this point to find her guilty of that lesser included offense under 206.
But would it be dependent upon any party's position? Couldn't, with the evidence having been presented and our decision having been made in Williams and the latest Chau decision, over everyone's objection, could not the Superior Court have sentenced for manslaughter?
In 1995, yes.
I mean, today?
No, because of judicial estoppel given the state's position. The state is...
But even if you're right, even if the state is judicially estoppel, that doesn't mean that the Superior Court would be bound by the silence of the state, by the equitably enforced silence of the state, does it? Superior Court don't want to do what it did anyway.
I believe they are. If the state is a stop from prosecuting someone, the court doesn't have an independent basis to convict them. If the state has brought an untimely prosecution, if the state has brought an imperfect prosecution for a number of reasons, and the prosecution, if the state's prosecution cannot go forward, the trial court doesn't have an independent basis to convict someone.
But isn't this part of the original prosecution?
Yes, it is.
Well, right. One way to read the state's argument, it would be to assume that Williams had been decided before Chau's trial. So Williams would be the law. Williams would be the construction of the felony murder statute. Then Chau's having their prayer conference, and the state, the way I read their brief's position, would be, given Williams' construction of the statute and our evidence, while we still want to proceed on felony murder, we're not convinced that, as a matter of law, the jury is going to go with that, and therefore, we're asking for these lesser included offenses. So they're saying that they wanted Chau to be convicted of something, and the Williams precedent would have put them on notice maybe felony murder wasn't going to be the conviction.
Mm-hmm.
But don't you agree the state would have wanted her convicted of something?
Oh, certainly, and that's the reason for why we're here today. But that's a position of expedience and not based on a construction of Section 206 for lesser-included offenses.
What do you have to say about Judge Scott's analysis? What Judge Scott said in his opinion is, if I look at the manslaughter statute and I look at the instructions to the jury had to make factual findings consistent with manslaughter before they got to felony murder. Isn't that basically what he said?
Yes. And he's correct. There was sufficient evidence to convict for manslaughter, says under the evidence. There was a lesser-included offense. The difficulty is that the state prevented that, says in 1995, and the judicial estoppel doctrine, as the Superior Court articulated it, the party switching positions must have some degree of culpability, and there must not be a good reason for the switch. Here there is not a good reason for the switch, because if the switch was based upon a new interpretation of the law of lesser included offenses under 206, there would be a good reason for the switch. But the switch is due to expedience here, and it's a calculation which occurs frequently, it says in these cases, when lesser included offense prosecutorial decisions are made in the Superior Court. And the court has referred to the dynamics in the Cox decision and several other cases as to the reason why lesser-included offenses are charged. But juries and prosecutors evaluate cases, If they have very strong evidence as to guilt, but it's not quite a lock on guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, they'll permit a lesser include offense instruction, particularly, let's say, in a nonviolent crime. But if it's a situation where the state seeks maximum punishment, but they're worried about the weakness of their evidence that the jury might come back with a lesser include offense, and they want to prevent that undesirable goal, they'll oppose a lesser include offense conviction. As an illustration, I'd like to bring out a case that was decided in the Superior Court not too long ago, and it's based upon the operation of a motor vehicle causing death statute, which I know, given the en banc consideration, this all the court is familiar with. But it's a case before Judge Slights in the Superior Court that Mr. Wallace is somewhat familiar with. It was the Keith Sharpley decision. Keith Sharpley was charged. He was an individual who T-boned two ladies, two older ladies, on Kennett Pike near the Wilmington Country Club. He disregarded a red light. He was going 66 miles per hour in a 50-mile-per-hour zone. He was charged with criminally negligent homicide. The defense sought a lesser-include offense instruction to operation of a motor vehicle causing death, saying that his degree of culpability, negligence, wasn't sufficient to establish criminally negligent homicide. The state didn't charge, as I recall, with even vehicular homicide, which carried a lesser penalty, and the state opposed a conviction, a lesser-include offense, for operation of a motor vehicle causing death. And the reason for the opposition was, well, I remember one reason was that the operation of a motor vehicle causing death statute was in the motor vehicle code, and therefore it can't be charged as a lesser-include offense of the criminally negligent homicide in the criminal code. Now, nonetheless, Judge Seitz observed in his decision that based upon 206 and lesser-included offenses, the operation of a motor vehicle causing death, he found, was an LIO of both criminally negligent homicide. He said the state's position, says, was disturbing, says there, but he found that it was a lesser-included offense. Under those circumstances, can the state now say, well, you can't convict them of operation of a motor vehicle causing death. We're going to move to vacate his conviction of operation of a motor vehicle causing death because it was not a lesser included offense. No, they're not. What they were seeking in that case, though, was to preclude the possibility of a lesser punishment where guilt may not be. There may be an impediment or a weakness in establishing guilt beyond reasonable doubt of the greater charge. That's what we have in this case. We have expedience. Rather, the state agrees today that under 206, that manslaughter is a lesser included offense of the charged offense of murder. In 1995, they opposed it. What has changed? What has changed is the expedience of having the availability of getting maximum punishment that they sought against Ms. Chow.
What has changed is the law.
Sorry?
What has changed is the law.
Well, it has changed, but it changed with respect to whether there was sufficient evidence to convict of felony murder. It didn't change as to whether there was sufficient evidence to charge for the lesser included offense of manslaughter, as the state agrees today.
Well, nothing. There are two issues. One is, what is a lesser included offense? The second issue is there evidence to support the conviction of the lesser included offense? And help me understand your characterization of the state's position. Are you saying they've never contended as a matter of law they could be lesser included offenses? Or were they saying in Chow's case there wasn't evidence to support it, even though they acknowledge if there was evidence to support it, it could be a lesser-included offense?
They alleged that there was no evidence to support a conviction for manslaughter in 1995. They didn't say it was precluded as a matter of law. They said there was no evidence to support a conviction. Today they're arguing that there is. It's a position of expedience because they've been deprived of obtaining maximum punishment that they
originally
sought.
Well, that was an argument they made, and the court apparently accepted it at the time. But now Judge Scott has looked at the record, and the judge has reached a different conclusion. How is that any different than when a judge says, I either am or I am not going to give the charge based on my view of the evidence? Isn't the judge have the ultimate say on whether there's evidence to support it?
Well, we have to consider it's the same judge, 1995 or just last year. And the decision is different, and we submit because of the state's position. And the state has changed its position.
Well, Judge Scott wasn't the judge in 95.
Correct. But we I'm just trying to make the point that that doesn't make a difference who the judge was. The Superior Court is the Superior Court.
Can I understand? Let's assume we agree with you. And let's see how this rule applies in other circumstances. Let's assume someone's convicted of three crimes for each punishable up to 10 years, and the state at the original sentencing asked for 2, 2, and 2. And we reverse and throw out two of the convictions.
Mm-hmm.
And we go back. The rule now is that at resentencing, the state can ask for more than two.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't they be stopped in that circumstance for asking for more than two under your analysis?
They're not stopped because at the original sentencing, they asked for six. So there's no expedience there. It's under the White decision. It's they're asking for the Superior Court to implement its original sentencing plan. There's no estoppel there. I agree with that. If the
court want to save your time?
Yes, sir, if permitted.
Good morning. I don't want to inhibit you from stating your name for the record, Mr. Wallace. Go ahead.
I refuse to do that, and I also refuse to mention Operation Motor Vehicle Causing Death in front of this court because I think we've about had it up to here with each other on that one. But introduce myself anyway, Paul Wallace on behalf of the state. Good morning. The real question presented in this case is whether or not, after a change in the felony murder statute, the state's stopped from asking whether Vicky Chow can be convicted of the lesser and sentenced for the lesser included offense of manslaughter, when in the 1995 trial, it asked that there be no lesser included as to the intentional murder. That's what the record shows. If we look at the prayer conference, the only lessers that were spoken of were the intentional murder. And why? Because we need to put ourselves back in 1995 and what the law was. The law was that there would be no rational basis in the evidence to, and if we want to talk about 206, there has to be a rational basis in the evidence to acquit of the one charge and find only of the lesser. And as the construct of felony murder was at the time.
Can the position be refined that clearly, that it was only opposing lessers on the intentional and not on the felony murder?
Yes.
Or is it just we opposed lesser included?
No, I believe it can. If we actually look at the transcript at A44 and 45 of the transcript of the prayer conference, it is clear they are talking only about the intentional state of mind, that there is no reason to believe this is anything but an intentional act. And the intentional state of mind only applies to the first three counts of first-degree murder, the intentional murder count. It makes no sense to talk in those terms as to the felony murder because reckless state of mind was, in fact, the state of mind applicable to the felony murders in this case. And I'd suggest that if we read it, and we've raised this in our brief at page 8 and note 1, we pointed that out. The state was only talking about, and the court was only talking about, lesser included offenses as to intentional murder. The state was suggesting
The record's clear. That was the only request, that we want lessers on intentional. They never were asking for lesser included offenses on felony murder.
I suggest respectfully, Your Honor, the record is clear on that. I would point the court, of course, to A44 and 45, and that's where that discussion is had as to the lesser-included offense at the 1995 trial. And that's important because if we
Is that critical to your case here?
I don't know that it's wholly critical, but I as to the judicial estoppel argument that the state cannot even ask for manslaughter to be sentenced, and I think the court's made a very clear distinction. Judicial estoppel doesn't stop the court. It stops a party from taking a different view or a directly contradictory view. My argument is that, first of all, the court, under this court's Chao decision in 2007, was instructed to determine whether or not manslaughter, sentencing for manslaughter, may be applicable. And it did so. Could do so, as Justice Ridgely said, without the state or the defense taking a position at all, because it had before the findings of fact of the jury in the verdict, finding beyond a reasonable doubt that she acted recklessly as to the felony murders.
So your position, or one of your positions, is that even if the state is a stop, so what?
Yes. Your Honor can say it that way, but I can't. Yes, because the court can take, the court has before it a verdict. The court has to determine what to do with that verdict, and was instructed by this court to look at whether or not manslaughter is appropriate, given the fact that now the law has changed and there is insufficient evidence as to that second element of felony murder.
Okay, so that's one of your positions.
Yes.
That is, the whole issue of estoppel is irrelevant, because the true issue was whether the court had the power to do what it did, and it clearly not only had the power, but it was mandated to do what it did.
I believe it was, yes.
All right, but your second position is that even if even if judicial estoppel is relevant, there is none here, because the position that the state took that's asserted as the basis for judicial estoppel was applicable only to the three intentional murder counts, but not as to the three felony murder counts.
Yes. We did not take a directly contradictory position, because we only said as to the intentional murders, there is no rational basis to acquit and to convict only on that. That takes away the first underpinning, basically, of when judicial estoppel should be applied.
But you've got a third position, too, don't
well,
you?
Well, and the third position, yes, is that if, in fact, I'm wrong on both of those, that there has been the other time when judicial estoppel may not be applicable is when there's been a significant change in the law. And here there was. When the state was in the trial of Vicky Chao in 1992, it would have had no reason to ask for lesser includes, or any reason to believe that there would be under Rule 2, under 206, that in fact there would be reason to believe that a lesser included was applicable. It has to make that sense, that in fact there is a rational basis in the evidence to acquit, that in of furtherance of element was not there. Well, under Chao's own decision in 1992, and that was what was was applicable in 1995, there's no reason to believe that in fact there's not a rational basis to prove that it's just the identity type construct of Chao from 1992. Williams then changed that, and changed it drastically. I believe Justice Holland certainly put it much better than I can, and that is, if Williams had been decided before the 1995 trial, then the state may have said, do we have enough to show the in furtherance of? And then may have said, Your Honor, we want manslaughter on that. Because, yes, this was a heinous crime, and yes, we need to make that calculus, and both sides make the calculus as to what to do with lesser included offenses. But you can't divorce, as it appears the appellant wants to, Williams from the decision that's made under Rule 206C. You just can't, because trying to make that decision as to whether or not a lesser is in the best interest of the state's position at that time was wholly dependent on how that element of in furtherance of would be interpreted. In 1995, when it was interpreted under the 1992 decision in Chao, there was no rational basis and the state would not take that position. After Williams, we would. And we believe that that is such a significant change in the law that judicial estoppel certainly does not apply here.
Well, after Williams, the statute was changed.
Yes.
So, I mean, this is not going to come up again after the change in the statute.
No, it will not. I'd suggest, quite honestly, this is a very clear-cut case. The court, as Justice Jacobs said, not only had the power, but to a certain extent had the mandate from this court to look at the verdict as it was and make the proper decision under Justice And the state certainly had the right and the ability and was not in any way stopped from forwarding that the court should do precisely that and should sentence Vicky Chow for manslaughter stemming from the felony murder convictions that had to be in part vacated.
What are the limits on this? If there's an appellate decision that changes the outcome of the case, does that mean that the state can switch positions on anything in the retrial or when it's before the Superior Court again?
No, I suggest not. I think that this is such a, how many Vicky Chow cases ever come up that have had this incredible history to them? But if in fact in the 1995 trial, I think the defendant's position might be stronger. If in fact the state looked at the felony murder, and was specifically asked, "Do you want the lesser of manslaughter?" and said no, even though we were guided by that interpretation, they'd certainly be stronger. The difference here is that one, there is no direct contradictory position being taken, and two, this change is seismic, really. You have a decision from the very same case that says the element means this, and so that the state would never want to, the state was fully...
Well, I know that, Lauren Myers wrote the brief and you didn't, but
yes.
Is what you're telling us that we're going to find on A44 and 45, was that argued in the state's brief as clearly as you're presenting it today? Because it appears to me to be a new and different and arguably persuasive argument that if at the prayer conference everyone was only talking about intentional murder and the state's position was no lesser included offenses under intentional murder, and no one ever discussed lesser included offenses under felony murder, then clearly the state's not stopped because it never took the position.
I believe page 8, note 1, is Mr. Myers' discussion of that. I believe also on page 10 where there's a discussion, at several points, he notes that there was no rational basis in the evidence to acquit of the intentional murder. And I would suggest that if we looked at 844, or A44, I'm sorry, at the prayer conference, the prosecutor, it's pretty clear from the evidence in this case that this was an intentional killing, and there's no evidence to the contrary. And the judge goes on and says the same thing. There's simply no discussion of the felony murder. There's always discussion of the intentional murder and the intentional state of mind.
So basically, there's just a evidentiary vacuum on this, on the state's position regarding the three felony murder counts. Is that right?
I'd suggest that in 1995, I guess it could be viewed as an evidentiary vacuum. But
well, there either is. Was a position taken regarding the three felony murder counts that there wasn't?
I suggest there was no position taken. If we look at the prayer conference, there was no position taken, and there's good reason for no position being taken, because under the then extant law, nobody would discuss lesser included offenses of felony murder in that context.
Well, in your examination of the record, and can you point us to where we would find Chow's request? You are telling us she only wanted lesser included offenses under under intentional murder, and she never requested lesser included offenses under felony murder.
Your Honor, if that same page, A44, and that's where it's first discussed, Mr. Hurley, who was then her trial counsel, stated, "I will ask for lesser included offenses, and I'm not going to argue the point. I'm simply going to say that." And the court asks, what lesser? And he says, murder second and manslaughter. And then the prosecutor, who was Mr. Wood, "I would object, Your Honor. It's pretty clear from the evidence this is a case that this was an intentional killing, and there's no evidence to the contrary." I think it's fair to say that both sides agree it was an intentional killing. The court then, skipping down a little bit, "In order to give lesser included, I would need evidence in the record to indicate that the offense was a lesser included offense. And what you have, deaths as a result of an intentionally set fire, I don't see that. Mr. Hurley says, okay. And then Mr. Hurley goes on to talk about, I take the position some things we're familiar with, pointing a gun at someone's head. It's so predictable. One could argue that it couldn't be reckless. Arson's a different animal. They're always talking about the intentional state of mind. I cannot point the court and specifically say, we're not asking, that Mr. Hurley said, we're not asking for lesser included as to felony murder, nor can I say the state specifically said you should not give one as to felony murder. But I believe that's the evidentiary vacuum, if we call it that, is because of the nature of the state of law in 1995. No, they simply wouldn't have that discussion. Because
on lesser included, on a felony murder instruction, if lesser included had been given on intentional murder, would the practice in 1995 have been to instruct the jury that first they have to find the felony, either the offense charged or a lesser included felony, and then the other elements of the case, such as that it was in furtherance of?
Yes, I cannot think of a case, Your Honor, where a lesser included felony murder instruction was given. Generally, it was the you must first find that this occurred in the course of, in furtherance of a felony. By that I mean, and at one point it was in the course of, in furtherance means to assist it forward. Then after Chow, for a period of time, it was that goes to the identity of the person as being the person engaged in the felony who caused the death here, and now it's gone back after Williams. But never was there, I can't think of a case, and in my practice I don't ever recall seeing a lesser included offense given as to the felony murder because the state may not make out the felony or may not be able to make out the in furtherance of. Those are very unusual factual circumstances, and as I noted, perhaps if Williams had been decided before the 1995 trial, the prosecutor may have thought differently about it and said, well, now are we making out the in furtherance of? I don't know. But so I don't believe that was the practice.
Where does that take us? Are we saying that manslaughter is a lesser included offense of felony murder? Or are we saying there are no lesser included offenses of felony murder? However, if we go back to the intentional murder with the change in the law, manslaughter on these facts was a proper lesser included offense on the intentional murder.
I think what we are saying is that I believe that manslaughter could have always been a lesser included of felony murder. If the state couldn't make out that element of either construct, that it had actually happened to further a felony, or it happened in relation to a felony such that they could make that element out. Those are two separate elements. So if, in fact, the state had brought a felony murder prosecution and there was a rational basis in the evidence to acquit, to believe that, in fact, there isn't sufficient evidence that that felony involvement is there, I'd suggest manslaughter could have always been a lesser included offense, and it still can be.
So I think we've come full circle then. What we now know in Chow's case is that felony murder, we'll say, was not a possible consideration because of Williams. And then the state is presented with the circumstance where with intentional murder, it originally took the position the facts didn't support a lesser included offense. But now that felony murder is not an option, it's taking the position the facts do support the lesser included offense. Is that right?
Support the lesser included offense as to the felony murder, not as to the intentional state of mind. It was always our position that, because by operation of law, under Section 253, whenever you've proven the intent, you've proven the reckless state of mind. But 206 operates a little differently because when you get into there's a charging question, but then there's the instruction question and the trial dynamics question, and that is whether or not there was enough evidence as to the intentional murders to rationally acquit of that and convict only on manslaughter. Now, if we go to the felony murders, knowing now what we know about Williams, was there a rational basis to acquit as to the felony murder and find only on the manslaughter? Yes, there was, because that felony part of it was not there under current law.
Is it correct that there were no lesser included instruction on manslaughter was given at the trial at all? Is that right?
Yes.
Because if there had been, then the jury would have addressed that and acquitted.
And it would have only gone to the intentional murder, yes.
Well, that would be the same lesser included offense that that the defendant was just sentenced on, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Thank you.
I'd like to address the state's point that judicial estoppel doesn't stop the Superior Court or the trial court from resentencing or convicting a defendant. Well, I'd like to make the point that if that were so, judicial estoppel would never apply because the trial court cannot be estopped from doing what the state is seeking to do. And essentially, judicial estoppel really essentially means that the prosecution is estopped from judicially convicting this person because of its actions, not that the trial court is estopped. It's the Superior Court is essentially the surrogate for the prosecution under those circumstances. So it's we contend a distinction without a difference. The state alleges that there was a significant change in the law after 1995 with the Williams decision. Again, we'd like to emphasize that the change in the law was unrelated to Williams, that what occurred here when the trial court denied a lesser included offense instruction was an evidentiary decision based upon 206, and now the state is taking a totally different position.
Well,
because
are you going to comment on the point that Mr. Wallace has made that actually the only lesser included discussion related to intentional, and that they have not taken an inconsistent position?
I think they have taken an inconsistent position because they took the position in 1995 that there was that a lesser included offense instruction was not warranted, period.
As I understand your position, manslaughter as a lesser included of intentional murder would be the same manslaughter that would be instructed to the jury as a lesser included of felony murder. And that if the state took the position with regard to intentional murder that there wasn't a support for manslaughter, it would have to say there was no support for manslaughter as a lesser included of felony murder, because we're talking about the same secondary offense as a lesser included offense of either felony murder or intentional murder. Is that right?
I agree with that. It's an evidentiary question under Section 206. And the state is deprived now of the essentially what Williams did. Williams didn't change the law with respect to lesser included offenses. Williams moved the goal away of the state's goal of obtaining maximum punishment further away. And that's why they changed their position. I have nothing, unless the court has further questions, I have nothing further to offer.
Mr. Wallace, you had a few moments. Just can you respond to my question? Is it true that if manslaughter had been charged as a lesser included of either intentional or felony murder, we're talking about the same manslaughter instruction to the jury?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. The court will take this matter under advisement and take a brief recess.